Okay, we're almost there, Fred.
You can go ahead and start it. So, really excited tonight. We've had the privilege of having a couple folks come up from Santa Barbara to give talks over the past month and a half or so. And tonight we have a gentleman that's going to come up and talk from Santa Barbara. But I just want to warn the folks that have commitments. This gentleman that's going to be talking tonight, I found out, is known as God's angry little helper. So if you're down in Santa Barbara, we're going to find out more about that. But evidently, if you have a commitment and you don't show up on time or do what you're supposed to, God's angry little helper is going to visit you, kind of like a dark angel or whatever. So that's going to be interesting. Then also, the other thing about this speaker is that he actually has figured out how to get a weed whacker motor into his vehicle, and he actually uses that to drive his car back and forth. So we'll find out more about that. Woof, woof, right? So without any further ado, Fred C., come on up and share your story.
Thanks, Derek. My name's Fred. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Fred!
Wow, man, it feels really good to be up here. You guys have seen the sport coat. Okay, it's coming off. You know, I'm sober today. And like Caleb started his story with, I have a sobriety date. It's 8-22 of 99. I have a sponsor. His name's Father Patrick Mullen. And I have a home group. It's the Wednesday Night Junkyard Dogs. Woof. And if any of you males are in Santa Barbara on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, come check us out. We're in the Vets building on Cabrillo. You can't miss us. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is really amazing. You know, this is not normal for me. This is not normal to come up here and share on a Saturday night about my drinking and what I did to stop drinking. What's normal for me is to be at the Mecca or Mel's or the Sportsman with like urine-soaked trousers, you know, having somebody try and buy me a drink. So, you know, I'm not paid by Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not paid to be here. You know, I do this for fun and for free and because it works. Can you hear me in the back?
Yeah.
All right. All right, man. I'll try and talk loud because I want you to hear it, and I talk fast because I got a lot to say. You know, I try and stay on the firing line of life in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was up here about a month ago, and one of our home group members spoke up here. And, excuse me, after the meeting, I came straight up and met your guys' secretary and offered my services. Like, hey, I'd like to speak here. Can I speak at a meeting? And, you know, I didn't sit around and wait for someone to call me. You know, I offered my services. And so I said, hey, can I please speak? And so this is why I'm here. Because I want to be able to be involved in Alcoholics Anonymous and bring a beneficial message to somebody. If you don't hear anything that you can identify with tonight, you know, God bless you. Go to more meetings. You know, you'll hear something out there. I want to talk a minute about my home group. It's an amazing bunch of guys. We all suffer from alcoholism and untreated alcoholism. And, you know, I came into that meeting. It was my first Wednesday night there. And there was a guy at the door, like there is every Wednesday, greeting. And I came up to the door, and he stuck his hand out, and he says, you know, my name's so-and-so. Welcome to the Junkyard Dogs, man. We got coffee in there. Go take a seat. If you want to talk, I'd be happy to talk to you after. And I'm like, you know, shaking and sweating and DTing. And, you know, I found my little seat, and I sat down, and I got a cup of coffee. And then, like, the meeting started, and, you know, we had a leader, and the guy kind of seized up. He didn't know what he was going to talk about. He just kind of drew a blank. And that was fine. You know, he drew a blank, and then someone farted. And then, the warmth of Alcoholics Anonymous just, like, you know, surrounded the room, and everyone started laughing. And, you know, it was okay. And then the secretary, well, the guy said, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And then the secretary said, you know what, man? It's okay. It's all right. You know, because in that silence, I heard hope and serenity. And I heard a prayer for the alcoholic who still suffers. And, you know, I'm getting goose pimples just thinking about it, like my hair's standing up. And, you know, that was me. You know, I was the alcoholic who still suffered. And another time in that meeting, I was, like, standing there, and we were praying out. We were holding hands, doing the prayer. And, you know, it's like, you know, we pray for the alcoholic in and out of these rooms. And so the guy next to me goes, oh, my God, you're here. I no longer have to pray for you. And, so, you know, that's how it works. You know, we pray for the alcoholic who still suffers in and out of these rooms. You know, that guy could stop praying for me because I was there. You know, I had found a message in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it became my home group. And there's no turning back. It's like, another reason it became my home group is because we talk about this. We read out of this. And if you don't know what this is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the blueprint to our recovery. This is how I got sober. And what Caleb talked about is the same thing that happened with me. It's like I found a sponsor who was versed in this book, and he took me through those 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because I did the work, not him or the guy at 7-Eleven, you know, I was able to have a spiritual awakening where God entered my life and he took away that desire for me to drink. He took away that desire for an alcoholic to drink. And that was something that's a miracle. You know, a miracle happened today. I didn't have to take a drink. And it's because of this and the work that I did. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing. I came in and, you know, I had one foot in the gutter and one in the grave. And it was like, you know, Caleb talked about it. Which way am I going to go? Which way am I going to go? And so I decided to check out Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new here, welcome. If you're new here and you're within 30 days, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to whatever this is, the Golden Group. Welcome. I mean, look at all this stuff around here, man. Look at these two guys. One day at a time, this is killer, man. Let's get pumped on Alcoholics Anonymous. Make sure to do your commitments. No. Okay, so a little bit about myself was I'm an adopted only child, and I'm scared, and I'm lonely, and I have these parents that are like older than most kids' parents, and I'm shy, and I'm embarrassed. And, you know, if we make friends out on the schoolyard and stuff, if you want to come over to my house, it's not going to happen. You know, if you want to come over and play cars or whatever, it's not going to happen. We can go over to your house, but you're not coming over to my house. And because I didn't want my old man yelling at you or my mom saying something embarrassing or you asking questions about why my parents look like my grandparents. And it's like, it's just not going to happen. So, you know, I grew up in that household and it was a real embarrassment for me. And then around age 12 or 13, me and the neighbor kid, we stole a couple of Bud Talls from his parents' fridge. And we went to Moore Mesa, which was like a little park in Goleta. And we woofed these Bud Talls. You know, and my little alcoholic body, like something started happening. That Bud Tall started to work its magic. You know, I started tingling and feeling okay. You know, and the magic that happened was Fred felt okay at Fred. You know, I was okay. I wasn't that scared, nervous, adopted kid. You know, and I was like, oh my God, you know, something started to happen. It's like, all right, now I know why the adults drink. You know, they drink a lot and they play cards and they drink. It's like, okay, all right, now I'm getting it. So, you know, I made a decision right then and there. It's like, I'm going to do this as much and as often as I can. You know, because I like feeling okay with me. You know, I went back to that smoke-filled house where the parents are constantly arguing and they're, like, making fun of me and it's, you know, just abuse and, whew, and I was okay. You know, I was okay with the parents. And so then, you know, the drinking just took off from there, you know. It was like, you know, next time I remember, like, going to, like, a neighborhood surfer kid party and, like, you know, these kids are, like, in high school and I'm in junior high. You know, and I roll up on my mom's 3-speed Schwinn. And this guy, like, hands me a drink, and he's like, oh, here, Fred, drink this. And I'm like, oh, what is it? And he's like, oh, screwdriver. And I'm like, what? And he's like, orange juice and vodka. And I'm like, what? Just drink it. So, you know, I drank it, and I drank another, and I drank another. And then at some point, we went to this little skate park slash arcade, and I proceeded to get into a fight with a pinball machine. And I was quickly 86'd out of there and was told to go chill out in the car. Where I blacked out and I puked up in this kid's car. And, you know, then they all come out there and they weren't too stoked. And then then they take me up to my parents' house. And what happens next is, you know, my parents find out about their only adopted son's drinking. You know, their only adopted son is pushed up to the house in a shopping cart covered in his own vomit and his own piss. And that's okay. You know, I got a lust for vomit. I like to vomit. And so my parents, you know, that's like their introduction to my alcoholism. And it's funny, my mom set me up that same night as it was to, you know, happen, you know, 30 or so years later when I decided to stop drinking. She set me up with a puke bowl and a gallon of water. So, you know, the drinking just progressed on and on and on and on because, you know, it's the only thing that worked in my life. It's the only thing that made Fred feel okay with Fred. And I don't care what you do or what you say, you know, frothy emotional appeal, it's like, whatever, you know, I'll tell you what you need and I'll do what you need to see because you're not going to get in the way of my drinking. You're not going to take away the only thing that works in my life. Because there was either alcohol or suicide. That's it. You know, I had two choices. So You know, it started progressing in high school, you know, getting kicked out of high school for, like, beer in the locker, you know, coming back from lunch drunk, all that type of stuff, making fake doctor's excuses, and, you know, going down to the beach and woofing beers and stuff. You know, just all that, you know, the high school drama. And, you know, made it through high school and, you know, started going to City College. Well, tried to go to City College. You know, we'd get to that first class, and, you know, I'd look at my buddy and we'd both be like, 12-pack, and, you know, we'd go get a 12-pack and sit up on TV Hill. Remember TV Hill? Yeah, that's gone. And so we'd sit there, and we just, like, alcohol was such a huge part of my life. You know, it was like the you know, my whole life was surrounded, I surrounded alcohol. It's like, if I couldn't get alcohol, I could not function. I was not comfortable being around you or just being alone by myself. You know, I'm like, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, and I'm drinking by myself. You know, I'm going to high school dances, and I'm stealing bottles of, like, champagne. And I have to woof, like, 2 bottles of champagne before I can dance with a chick. And, you like that one? You know, so somehow, like, I make it through high school. You know, I walk up on that stage, and, you know, it's like, you know, I can't believe this. I can't believe that I'm, like, you know, making it through high school. And then, you know, it's on to, like, City College. And, you know, I'm starting to date this chick. And, you know, we're living with her mom, and her mom's a nurse. And, you know, we're living up on the east side in this little home. And, you know, one of the agreements for me moving in there with her and the daughter was that I got to watch and I got to try and tone down the drink. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, whatever you need. Okay. And so, you know, after the initial move-in date, you know, I'm walking down. It's on the east side. That same day, you know, I find out about the Mecca. I found out about the Mecca on Milpas, and that was soon to become my next home, second home. And, you know, I pretty much spent every waking moment at the Mecca. You know, if you couldn't find me, I was at the Mecca. And, you know, I was usually, like, the only weddo in there. And, you know, I'd get there before the bartender. I'd be like, come on, open up, let's go. You know, I'm shaking, I got to get something. And, so it went on and on and on and on like this for a long time. And, you know, the disease really started. I was like in my 30s and it really started to take hold. And, you know, I had this little job at a silkscreen shop. And, you know, I had like the responsibility of like holding the key. So I was like, I'd have to get there and open up the joint and start the dryers and get everything prepped for that day of work. You know, some pretty big responsibilities. And, you know, it took every ounce of energy I had to get up and to go to this silkscreen shop instead of going to the Mecca. So I would get up there and I would do the least amount as possible, start the dryers, whatever, split. And, you know, this went on for a long time and I'd write these little notes like, oh, dude, you know, I don't feel so hot, or, you know, I got the shits or whatever. And, like, you know, and then, like, I would just pass off all these responsibilities, like, on my coworker, Fish, or, like, you know, whatever. And so, you know, like, when I would show up there, if I did make it through it, well, if I made it to lunch, I would, like, burn rubber out of there, and it was straight up to the Mecca. It was straight up to the Mecca, and I would woof as many beers as I could in 45 minutes, even though the lunch break was a half hour. And then I would go back to work. And, you know, after taking my medicine up at the Mecca, everything was okay. You know, I stopped shaking. You know, I stopped sweating. And I think I'm just, like, pulling the wool over your eyes. You know, it's like, hey, man, everything's okay. It's cool. But, you know, it's like, you know, I thought I had a lick, but I didn't. You know, my boss and all my coworkers knew it. They knew I was drinking. They knew I was, like, out of my mind. Well, I'm still out of my mind, right? Yeah. So this goes on and on and on. And, you know, the alcoholism is getting such a grasp on me. It's like, you know, the boss is like, you know what, Fred? If you have any more excuses for work, I want to see a doctor's excuse. You got to bring me a doctor's excuse if you're not showing up anymore. And I'm like, all right, whatever you need, Jack. And so it was during Fiesta. And, like, you know, I had the girlfriend calling sick for me. And then I'm like, okay, I got to go get this doctor's excuse. I got to go get some type of fake doctor's excuse. So I went to, like, you know, we had those little walk-in 7-Eleven clinics. And I go in there and I'm like, oh, doc, you know, I don't know. I think I ate some bad tacos or something. It's like during Fiesta. And so he's like, oh, you know, and I'm reeking of booze. And he's like, oh, you know, Will, Mr. C, you know, how much alcohol do you consume? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. You know, I work, so maybe 3 or 4 beers a night, like a working guy. And he's like, okay. So he writes me some script for some bullshit, some stomach thing. And, you know, so I slide that doctor's excuse up on the boss's desk. And I'm like, here you go, man. Here's your excuse. And so later on, you know, the same thing happens. It's like, you know, I'm waking up and that terror's on me. I got the four horsemen all around me. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, the game is up. You know, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. I got it. I got the answer. So I called the boss, and I'm like, oh, hey, man, you know, thanks for your help. You've been a really good boss, but, you know, I found another job. I found another job. Thanks for your help. See you later. So I quit the job. I quit the job that day, and then I sold my truck. Quit the job, sold the truck, and so now it's like I got no more baggage. I got no more ball and chain. And it's like my only mission now is to drink. It's like, oh, my God, thank God. It's like all I have to do is wake up and go down to the Mecca. That's it. And that same day that I quit the job, you know, I'm walking down State Street. I'm doing my little State Street crawl. You know, I'd had this little, you know, this little thing that I would do, you know, a little routine that we all have. And, you know, sometimes in the morning I'd be sitting there in the Mecca and I'd be looking out the window. And, you know, around 8, 8.30, all you guys start walking by to your jobs. You're all catching buses and driving cars and stuff. And you're going to your jobs. You know, you're like harpoon fishermen or gynecologists or something. And I'm like, God, how do they do it? You know, how do they get up and go to these jobs every day? You know, this is what I want to do. This is my life. You know, it's like I love to drink. I'm not going to stop drinking. And it's funny because the only thing that's fixing me is the same thing that's killing me. And so I wait for y'all to get to your little jobs and stuff. And then I hit my next, you know, my next point of interest. And so I'm doing my little State Street crawl. And I'm like, you know, it's like 10 in the morning. I'm already taxed. And I'm like, I'm just going to sit down here for a minute. And I sit down on this. We have these fountains on State Street. And I sit down. I'm just going to sit down for a minute. And I pass out on this fountain. It's not running. It's dry. And so then these three lowriders pick me up. And I got, like, two of them are flanking me, and they're like, get me into this back of this lowrider. And I'm like, oh, what's going on? And, like, I got, like, no idea what's going on. So they get me in the back of this lowrider, and I got one of them on each side of me. And one guy's like, oh, hey, man, you think you got a problem with alcohol? And I'm like, oh, you know, it's like, where's the bar? So these guys, I don't know if they were members of Alcoholics Anonymous, but all they wanted to do was to help me. And they're like, hey, man, where do you live? We're going to take you home. And I couldn't even talk. At 10 in the morning, I couldn't even tell them my address. I couldn't tell them what street I lived on, but I could point. I'm like, yeah, somehow they got me home. I don't remember any of the rest of the day. And okay, so like the alcoholism, it's like, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's just ramping up. It's ramping up. Something gnarly is going to happen. And I'm like, okay, I got an idea. I got something. Something's going to change. I'm going to try something different. So tonight, I'm not going to start drinking till 11. So I'm going to try and not drink all day. And then I'll start drinking at 11 at night. So I try it, and I make it to 11, and I rush down to the bar, and I'm like, you know, I'm watching the clock. I'm like getting it on like a madman because, you know, I got a lot less time. And so, like, you know, I'm just like, boom, 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 boom. And then, like, you know, last call comes on, like, you got to go. So I'm like, taxed times 10, you know, eyes are crossed, and I'm like, walking blackout. And so this poor cab driver gets me into his cab. He's like, all right, let me take you home. And he gets me home, and he knows that I'm just, like, out of my mind. And he's just like, hey, do you need some help up those steps? And I'm like, I got it. You know, so, like, I step out, and, you know, I'm trying to step up onto the curb, but I'm seeing, like, four of them. So I step onto what I think is the curb, and I just go down. Boom, face first. Down! Down on the curb. You know, split my head open, break my nose. You know, I could have lost all my chiclets, but I didn't. And so I get up. I get up, and I'm just, like, you know, I'm just, like, dripping blood. And, you know, and then I'm, like, I'm screaming, and I'm cussing. And then the girlfriend's mom comes to the door, and then she starts screaming, you know, because I look like something out of The Exorcist. And I'm just, like, out of my way, you know. And so then I, you know, just go face first down on the bed, and I pass out. And, you know, wake up the next morning. Or is it come to? Yeah, come to the next morning. And, like, the pillow stuck to the face, you know, peel that pillow off. Nice. And, yeah, and, you know, I go into that bathroom. I go into that bathroom and that horror of the next morning. You know, I got like a goose egg on the forehead. You know, nose is like sideways and swollen up. I got two black eyes. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. You know, raging bull. You know, I didn't recognize that innocent little shy kid anymore. He was gone. And he'd been gone for a long time. And, you know, I was like, oh my God, this is gnarly. You know, I guess this is it. You know, alcoholic death. Let's go. What do you got? Bring it. So I only got one answer, man. What is it? Down to the Mecca, man. Down to the Mecca. You know, black eyes, egg, you know, stinking. And so I'm sitting there doing my thing, drinking my beer. You know, and it's okay for me to drink. I'm just doing the same thing that the guy is doing next to me. I love drinking in bars. I love being in the bars because I'm not hurting anybody. I'm sitting here just drinking my beer, minding my own business. So I'm sitting there doing the same thing the next morning with the guy next to me. And he's like the professional street crawling sea urchin alcoholic guy. And he's been doing this for a long time. And I look at him and I notice that he's got the same scar as me. And he looks at me and he goes... And you know, and it's like, oh my God, this is me. This is me right here. Like 10, 20, 30 days from now. And so I'm like, oh, it's all right, man. It's going to be okay. You know, it's like, that's fine. I got it, man. You know, I'm already like, you know, defecating myself and, you know, whatever. It's like, you know, I already quit the job, sold the truck, you know, girlfriend's next, whatever. You know, it's like, whatever. I don't need it. Because you're not going to take the only thing away from me that works. You're not going to do it. It's got to be my choice. And so that same day in that bar, you know, I have this alcohol-induced seizure. I seize up in that bar. And my body is just saying, Fred, stop. Stop. Enough with the alcohol. It's like, you got to stop. You're going to die. And so, like, I come out of that seizure. Somehow I got unlocked. I can't even get the Budweiser in the mouth. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to roll out of here as cool as I can. Like, you know, fall down in the back of the Mecca, soil myself, and, like, crawl up to that little east side house. And, you know, it's not really any different than the day before, except for the seizure. You know, but in that seizure, you know, something happened. You know, it's like, okay, it's like, wow, it's getting pretty bad. You know, so I crawl up to that house, and that mom's there. That mom's waiting for me, and she just simply says, Fred, you know what? I think you got a problem with alcohol. And if you don't do something about it, you know, I'm going to have to kick you out. And it's like, is that a threat? You know, that's not that big a deal. You know, but at that point, I was ready. Because in that, you know, I had that moment of clarity that we sometimes hear about in this room. You know, it's like the moment of clarity for me was like, you know what, Fred, you're going to die, and it's going to be really soon. So, you know, she said those words to me, and I'm like down at her feet. I'm at her feet crying. I'm like, oh, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know. And at the same time, I had guys getting sober around me. I had guys that I used to ride motorcycles with and be in bands and like skateboard with. And they were all going down the same path as me, but they you know, went a little off course and they started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they would come into the bars. They'd be like, hey, Fred, you know, we found something. We found something that might work for you. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm like, you kidding me? You guys are wussies and wimps and quitters. You know, I like to drink. You know, I like to wet myself. It's just a little up front. You know, you can't really tell. Especially if you wear black pants. Yeah. So, you know, so I keep pushing these guys away. And that night, in that desperation, I call one of these guys. I call him up and I'm like, hey, Mike, I'm ready, I'm ready, I'm ready. Can you take me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And he's like, oh yeah, Fred, you know, I'd love to take you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, this first guy called, he couldn't come get me. This first guy called the second guy. Second guy had just gotten out of knee surgery. That was Charles. And the guy who just gotten out of knee surgery calls this third guy. Third guy shows up at my house. Hey, I'm from Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here to get Fred. And they're like, well, you can't miss him. He's like blacked out right there on the carpet. And so, you know, this guy scoops me up and I leave with him. And, you know, he takes me back to his place and we stay up till like 3 in the morning talking. You know, he talked to me about his alcoholism. He talked to me about his drinking and the answer he had found in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what was amazing was he let me just cry and ramble and blabber and just like ask questions. And never once did he tell me I was an alcoholic, never once did he tell me what I need to do. You know, he let me talk and steer the conversation any way that I wanted to. And, you know, we stayed up till like 3 in the morning talking about his disease, my disease, and the answer he had found in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a part in the book that says, both you and the new man must walk hand in hand in the path of spiritual progress. So, you know, he's like, Alfred, it's getting late. We got to go to bed. I'm going to take you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in the morning. And I'm all, okay. So that night, he sets me up with a puke bowl and a gallon of water. And, you know, I got to tell you, I didn't really do too much sleeping, you know. And then that next morning was beyond horrific. First morning without a drink. First morning without the medicine. First morning without the Mecca. And it was one of those gray, overcast August mornings where you can't tell what time it is all day. I hate those days. And so he's like, all right, Fred, you know, you ready to go to a meeting? And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's like, he's all, well, before we go, I got some bad news for you. And I'm like, well, nothing could be worse than the way I'm feeling right now. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, last night, Mike died. And I'm all, Mike died? And Mike was the first guy that I had called. And he's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, no, I just talked to him. You know, I'm DTing, I'm sweating. You know, it's like, well, between the time you called him and this morning, he's dead. They found him blue. So, you know, Mike was super gnarly. He had like the heart the size of a canned ham, and he would do anything to help you. He would do anything. But he had a hard time helping himself. And he was an alcoholic, and that night he was drinking, and he was mixing prescription drugs with non-prescription drugs, and they found him blue that morning. So I hadn't even stepped foot into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I already found out that this thing is a killer. Some guy that I'd known for 15 years was now dead, and he tried really hard to impress upon me, you know, the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I finally wanted to receive it, he was dead. So we go to this first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at the Alano Club, and I'm sitting there sweating and shaking and DTing, and I have to get up twice to puke. And, you know, we leave there, and, you know, I'm in the car of the guy who's about to become my sponsor, and he looks over at me, you know, and I'm not looking or smelling too good, you know, just getting off a run. And he looks over at me and he goes, let's go get you cleaned up. Let's go get you cleaned up. And it wasn't like, call me after you shower. You know, why don't you give me a call after you shave? You know, don't go to another meeting until you clean up. It was like, let's go get you cleaned up. He wanted to help me. He wanted to be of service. And so we went back to my house. He cleaned me up. He put me to bed. He's like, I'm going to be back here at 7 to take you to another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so in one of those rides, I was like, oh, what is a sponsor? What does a sponsor do? And he's like, it's really easy, Fred. A sponsor is a guy who takes you through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and shows you how to properly use those 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in your life. And I'm like, will you be my sponsor? And he's all, Fred, I'd love to be your sponsor. I'd love to be your sponsor. And this guy was a vicious sponsor. He was like, he's a rock solid sponsor. If I ever had any question about Alcoholics Anonymous steps or personal life, he would always refer me to the book. Always. Sitting in that guy's living room, he asked me two questions. He said, Fred, do you honestly think you're an alcoholic? I'm like, yeah. And that's even before reading the book. And he's like, oh, are you willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol? And I kind of balked at that one. I'm like, what, re-roof your house? What do you mean? And he's like, oh, no, Fred. You know, if someone asks you to perform a service in Alcoholics Anonymous, are you willing to go to any lengths to do it? And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever you got. Yeah, let's go. And so he's like, okay, you know. And so that guy became my sponsor, and we started going through this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that Caleb talked about. And, you know, it was amazing. You know, he gave me some really clear-cut direction. And, you know, right out of the gate, he's like, oh, you know what, Fred? It's like, you know, I can help you out with some money and maybe a place to sleep and a couple of hot meals and stuff. But you know what? I can't give you the willingness to stay sober, and I can't give you a relationship with God. I can't give you a relationship with God. That's got to come from you and the work that you do. And, you know, a couple days later, you know, it's on and like, you know, I want to drink and I want to drink bad. And that craving's on me and I call up this guy. I'm like, hey, I want to drink. And he's like, oh, you got to ask for help. And I'm like, I am. And he's like, oh, no, Fred, you got to ask for help from a higher power. You got to get down and ask for help. You got to pray. Ask for that craving to be removed and then call me back. So I did that. I did that. I just went one click off from what I was doing the day before, which was not praying, to just one click. Just like, you know, God, help me. Please help me. Help me to stay sober right here, right now. So I did that, and then I called the guy. I'm okay, I prayed. He's like, okay, go find someone out in the street, a neighbor. Go find someone in a mall to help. It doesn't matter. Go help someone. And so I did that. I did two simple things that I'd never done before, and I was able to stay sober that day. And then shortly after that, he had me reading like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He had me start reading, you know, the doctor's opinion, and I read up to page 60, you know, and you know, we took those ABCs, but before we got to the ABCs, I would be sitting at this coffee table at this lady's house, at the girlfriend mom's house, and you know, I'm going through this book, and like the words are flying off the page. I'm like DTing, I can't even like control my eyes, and you know, and I'm like trying to stay focused on the words, and you know, so I'm reading this stuff. And this is what it says. It says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. Wow. Okay. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So it's describing me, but then it's telling me the answer. You know, it's like Sesame Street. It's like, ask you the question, then they tell you the answer. So so they're telling me the answer right here. They're like, only a spiritual experience will conquer. So how do I get this? How do I find this? Where do I go? CVS? You know, Payless? Where can I get this spiritual experience? And so, you know, I start going through this book with the sponsor. And, you know, we get to this 60, you know, and he asked me these questions, you know, the ABCs, everybody knows them. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That's more than apparent. B, that probably no human power could ever lead our alcoholism. The mother, the girlfriend, the job, the boss, human power, me. Self cannot fix self based on either my power or my lack of power. I cannot fix myself. I'm a human being. And then C, most importantly, that God could and would if he were sought. And it was pointed out to me, it's like, Fred, you're seeking him. You're looking at him. You're not finding anything. You're seeking. You know, number one, you're seeking him by going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're seeking him by asking me for help. And the main way that we seek God is through this book and through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Where are the 12 steps? Here we go. All right, there we go. That's how I seek God, is through those 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we do that. We take those ABCs, and immediately, you know, we take this third step. We take the third step, not just me. I took it with this man. And, you know, I offered myself to God. You know, so at this point, this is where I'm offering, you know, my life and my will to God to do with what he wants, God's will, not what Fred wants. And, you know, it was pointed out to me, it's like, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Okay, what God wants. I have no idea what God wants, but the payoff is by me doing this, I get to stay sober. There's no way I'm going to ever know what God wants for me to do. No way. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better once again do God's will. Do thy will. Relieve me all the Fred's bondage of self, all my petty little problems, my being shy, being embarrassed, you know, my fears, my troubles with the parents. Relieve me of that. So once again, so I can be of service to God. And I don't know if you guys know this, at the bottom of that page it says, next we launched off on a course of vigorous action. You know, the next step is, which is a vigorous house cleaning. That's the fourth step. I wish I had one of those pointer things. And you know, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. You know, I made one of myself. Fearless and moral inventory. And it's like, you know, we went through the directions in this book. And it's like, Fred, it's really easy. You know, I'm going to give it to you one column at a time. He spoon-fed me the directions out of this book so I could understand them. You know, square peg goes into a square hole. One column at a time. You know, write down the people, places, and things that you're resentful at. Okay? Next column, what's the cause? Why are you resentful at said person, place, or thing? Okay, you know, keep it short, man, little bullet points. We don't need to rewrite the, you know, Constitution. And then he showed me the direction in this book. You know, this is like the direction that the first 100 used to get sober, so they must be doing something right. So the next column, what it affected. And he showed me how to choose these words that pretty much cover all the bases of my life. You know, was it my self-esteem, my security, my ambitions, my personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? Next column, most importantly, my part. You know, I can pretty much cancel out all that stuff, and this is the only thing that I can change. This is where Fred gets to look at Fred, is my part. My part in all these so-called resentments. If I have a resentment, that means I play a part. There's no such thing as a justified resentment. If I have a resentment, I play a part. So once again, he showed me how to plug in these words. You know, where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid? / frightened. You know, next I launched off and I did a fear list and a sexual inventory. And I got through that. You know, and like Caleb talked about, you know, next was like we got into action, which is the fifth step. And, you know, just that writing, the spiritual act of writing that stuff down, looking at that stuff, looking at all the damage and the bullshit that I'd caused in my life, was something was happening. You know, it was like these little spiritual clicks. Something was changing in my life because this is not normal for me. It's not normal for me not to drink. You know, I am hardwired to drink. You know, that's what I do. It's like, that's all I do. And, you know, so like a couple weeks into this, you know, I'm out in front of this liquor store and I'm standing out in the sun and I'm holding this Coca-Cola and I'm like, oh, this is weird. You know, it's like, this is not normal. You know, and I'm having a little bit of a spiritual awakening. You know, I'm going just a little off course and I'm listening to another man who has come before me and something's changing. I'm doing the work and I'm praying and something's changing. And it just lands on me right there. It's like, you know what? This is working. This is working. You know, I'm standing here in the sun with a Coke. I'm not sitting here with a 12-pack. I'm not getting arrested. You know, I remember what the guy looked like inside. And, you know, it's beautiful out. I remember what the day looks like. So we do this fifth step in the program of action. You know, and then, you know, we did it at his house. And, like, you know, I start reading off all that stuff. And, you know, he's just sitting there like, You know, this is all horrible stuff to me. It's like, oh my God, you know, it's like Oprah. And, you know, but, you know, it's no big deal to him. This is all alcoholic stuff. So, you know, I get through that. I get through all this stuff. And so he directs me back to this book. He directs me back to the text that is going to enable me to find a spiritual awakening. And here's what it says. After taking this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Now, you remember my childhood, right? Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs. Okay, now this is really killer. Remember what it said in We Agnostics, the only thing that'll help us? But now, we begin to have a spiritual experience. Which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Now I begin to have exactly what I need to conquer alcoholism. And I'm only at the fifth step in the program of action. I'm already getting exactly what I need to recover. And the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. I'm not making this up. This is what the words say. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, it was like in front of that liquor store. Something started to happen to me. You know, I'm starting to change. I'm starting to change from the inside. And, so next, you know, just as important as reading that stuff to this guy was the next hour. You know, I got to be alone. I got to go home and be alone. Go somewhere and be alone with me and God for an hour. And think about the path that I have crossed. You know, and next is 6 and 7. I go through 6 and 7 and I'm looking at all these defects that I'd already identified and I'm becoming willing. I want these things removed so I can be a better service to God and to the fellows about me. You know, when we're ready, we say something like this: my Creator, I'm now willing. You should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in my way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. You know, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. We have then completed step 7. Boom. 8. You know, it's just like 3 to 4, 7 to 8 was like, here's the book. You know, start making the list. And I've already identified the people that I'd harmed in that fourth step. And there's, you know, all sorts of other people around town that they made the list and, like, you know, stores that I'd rip shit off from and, like, you know, whatever, flattening tires, ripping off car mirrors. All that type of stuff goes on this list. It makes the amends list. And all this is a list. I don't have to think about making amends at this point. It's a list. You know, so, and then, you know, at the bottom it tells us, remember, it was agreed in the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And it's in italics. So if you see something in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's in italics, the squiggly, slanted writing. You know, they're trying to like, you know, wake you up. It's like, hey, this is pretty important. And remember, that was one of the first things my sponsor had asked me. Hey, Fred, are you willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol? And I had agreed to that. So him and the big book are reminding me, remember in the beginning, you know, with the urine-soaked pants and the stinking and the lust for vomit, you were willing to go to any lengths then. What about now? It's like, okay, let's go. Keep bringing it, keep bringing it, keep bringing it. You know, Fred, you're doing good. You're doing good. You're doing beautiful. Keep going. You know, and then I was directed to go out there and start making some amends. And you know, this part of the book is incredible. They give us a lot of scenarios, a lot of situations that we may encounter. And each and every one of us in here is going to have a different case. And, you know, family members, lovers, bosses, stores, whatever. But the whole point is so I can stay connected to God. And one of the first ones that I did, one of the first amends that I had made was a guy that whenever we came into contact with each other, it came down to blows. Every time. Every time. And, you know, it's like, oh my God, you know, I got to go to this guy and I got to make this amends. And, so I show up at his house. Actually, I showed up there two times. He wasn't there. The third time I showed up, it's like, oh my God, the door's open, the car's out front. It's like, you know, I'm like flicking through this book and I'm new to the book and I'm looking for the third step. I'm looking for some type of power, you know, some type of strength to go up there. And I flick to this book, this part, this section actually, and it's like, you know, we must not shrink. We must not shrink in anything. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's good. It's like, hey man, you know, can I talk to you? And the guy's like, oh yeah, come on in. Come on in. And we sat down. And feud standing melted away in an hour. And I swear to God, everything that they talk about in the big book has pretty much been my experience. And, you know, before this, I'm like, how do I make an amends to these people? What do I do? What do I say? This is why I have the sponsor. So he goes, back to the book. We simply tell him that we will never get over drinking until we've done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street. You know, his problems are not discussed. So it's like, hey man, you know, I want to apologize for my actions in the past. You know, is there anything I can do to make it up to you? And he's like, no man, you know, I think you're doing it right now. You know, and we sat there and we talked and we had a good time and, you know, I left there and we shook hands and I left there. And like that fifth step, I was free. I was free of that one resentment. You know, that one piece, you know, like Caleb talks about all the bullshit we put in our backpack and we carry this backpack around all our lives, like all the resentments and the bullshit. And, you know, I was free of that much more. And, you know, I just kept going through them. And some resentments, you know, well, I'm going to continue to work on resentments the rest of my life. So then I got to step 10. You know, this is where, you know, I stay in conscious contact with God. And we must not shrink at anything. Okay, step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory. I'm continuing to look at Fred. I continue to look at Fred's bullshit and Fred's action. Here's what we do. Here's the direction. I continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these things crop up, I ask God right here, right now. I ask God at once to remove them and discuss them with someone immediately. You know, I can't even tell you guys how many times I've called up Caleb. It's like, hey, 10-step time, let's go. And I'm like, okay, I'm resentful at this person. This is the reason. You know, and then like, all he has to do is listen. He's just there to listen. And then God's listening at the same time. And then if I've harmed anyone, I go out there and I make amends. Because when this shit happens to me, you know, I've got this 1-inch plate of steel cutting me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Cutting me off from my relationship with God. And he knows, Caleb knows more than anyone. Well, actually, Jason knows. It's like, you know, I'm like a cobra. If I got something against you, I'm going to feed on it. You know, I'm going to feed on it and let it fester. And, you know, it's like poison. It's spiritual poison to me. And, you know, I got to clear that stuff up and I got to get rid of it quickly and promptly. If I want to stay connected to God. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Benjamin and us are using it. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. I've got to work at this. You know, because it's not normal for me to try and live on a spiritual life and take spiritual action. I have to work at it. I have to become a spiritual warrior by taking spiritual action. This does not come normal to me. So I work at, you know, step 11, and you know, it gives me some really, like, really clear-cut directions. Once again, when we retire at night, we ask ourselves some questions. When we awaken in the morning, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Let me think about what the day may bring before the day begins, so I'm not getting like the cold bucket of water in the face. It's like, okay, you know, okay, I got to go to that dentist appointment. Okay, you know, God help me to stay strong, make it through the dentist appointment. Real basic. So I use this stuff. I use these basic suggestions that the first 100 used. And then having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics. Now I'm at the 12th step, and I'm at the sponsor's house, and we crack the book open, and it's working with others, chapter 7. And it was described to me, you know, like I describe it to all my guys. I'm like the little bird leaving the nest. You know, now it's time for me to fly out of that nest and to deliver a message that I found to someone else. And, you know, we have this place in town called New House 3, and they have a sponsor night there, and I'm up there with like 1 month sober, 2 months sober. And they ask me to speak. And I get up there and I just tell my experience, strength, and hope. And then some guy asked me to sponsor him after that. And I check it with my sponsor, and the guy's older than me, and he's got more time. But he sees that I'm on fire, and I'm willing to go to any lengths. And so I sponsor this guy. You know, and he doesn't stay sober, but I do. And, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous today is, you know, I'm pumped on Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so fired up because I continue to do the basic actions that this sponsor directed me to do, and I continue to get the results. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Well, let's give him another round of applause.
That's fantastic. Okay, so we've got...